I'm not going to assume your gender. It's ugly. I can imagine the ugly things that go through your mind and the thoughts. I wouldn't want to live in your head for 1 minute. Very ugly. Do you go to work like that? Chad, how insensitive of you to think that I work. I mean, really, I'm a disabled American, and you think I can get up and go to work? I don't have that privilege. I want all of you to know, all of you that get up in the morning to an alarm clock, and you guys have the privilege to actually get up and take a shower and get in your car and go to work. Do you have any idea what a privilege that is? Any idea, really? And then you're going to sit here and say, I bet you don't even have a job. Well, of course I don't. I'm disabled. And really, and how insensitive of you to point that out. And you actually, you come here and this is rich. You actually come to a disabled woman's live feed and you mention employment and work.
Now, I'm not a betting man, but if I had to put my money on one bet, I would say that our thoughts were not the ugliest thing about that interaction that we just had right now. I mean, let's talk about this. First of all, there was the major shocker. We found out that was a woman, so our standards have really lowered. And also, I found out that I'm so sorry to assume that you should work for yourself, for clown self. Just because you're disabled doesn't mean you need to look like you're about to rat on some gangsters, Tekashi 6ix9ine. I mean, what happened to you after you got out of prison? This is some bad stuff, but we see this victimhood everywhere where people are complaining that they can't change, they can't help themselves, that the world is just messed up, the system is corrupt, and the only thing I can do is become a fat, disgusting piece of lard and then blame my disability for the reason why I'm unhappy. Not my obesity, not the fact that I look like I'm a part of a freak show, but of course, it's the fault of everybody else asking, why don't you do something for yourself? On that note, welcome back to Slightly Offensive, the best worst show on Blaze TV, where we always have that person's hair color confetti in 8K coming down on our faces, the COC. We have an amazing guest in the studio today, content creator, rapper, visionary, and of course, somewhat of a Twitter genius, Zuby. Welcome back to Slightly Offensive.
What's good, bro? How you doing?
You know what? You got the confetti back? Do you like that? How are you doing? You feeling that?
It was beautiful, man. Lovely.
Yeah, and so you see that video, right? And not to be so rude to the person, like just to tear down their appearance, just saying it's so interesting that people who tend to look like that or be in that position end up placing themselves in the superior position to condemn and to judge us and to tell us that in society, the problem is not with them, the problem is with us.
Mm. Was that was a serious video? It wasn't a parody?
I know it wasn't a parody. That's real.
It is real.
That's an American. That's America.
Wow.
Welcome.
Wow. Thank you. It's an interesting welcome, man. It's so hard to tell, though. Isn't that one of the big problems these days? You cannot distinguish reality from satire. Every single day I see something and I'm just like, is this real? Is this a prank? Is this a joke? Is this satirical? And oftentimes I'm bewildered to find out that it's a very real thing. So we live in a very strange and bizarre time.
Yeah, I know. It's a weird time. You're drinking tea. I know. I feel the British in you British. Coming out. A little tea, a little of that. Obviously, you've seen here that we have our diversity coalition because it is Black History Month, which we know is very important that we celebrate it every day. We are also joined in the studio by the lovely and the beautiful diversity hire, Savannah Hernandez, who's in the studio today with a confetti of color, host of the Rapid Fire podcast, and also our resident reporter. How are you feeling today, Savannah?
Doing good. Just another day in Black History Month. I went to the gym, and I got to watch a lesbian Black couple making out, and then I looked in the kids section, and then I got to watch the Disney Channel, you know, just doing all this Black History Month cartoons for the kids. So I'm just really feeling the Black history this month. It's beautiful.
Feeling it, too. I'm feeling the history. I'm feeling the future. On that note, guys, a huge shout out to the best boxer company in America. Obviously, you know that most boxers are made for not real men. They have like rainbow waistbands. They stick socks in the front. And maybe Zuby knows what it feels like to be like that. But I'm Caucasian. We're not fully there yet. But I will say, you know, if you're looking for something that's comfortable, what I hate about boxers is that they ride up. They tend to not fit really well around the thighs. They tend to, you know, get scrunched. And you're like, where do I find the best pair that's not only a company that loves and supports my values, but also supports my junk, protects me, and also keeps me from chafing? Well, Undertak boxers are the best for you. Honestly, they do not pill when you wash them for a long time. I'm actually wearing them right now. Savannah, can you not confirm that I showed you my waistband? That's all I showed her. Am I not wearing them?
Confirmed. He is wearing Undertak underwear, and he said that they are very comfortable.
Well, they always are, and they offer different types too. Like, they have the short brief like that, or the long brief, like if you're, you know, working out or whatnot, and you want a little more support, you don't want things to ride up even more. But of course, like I said, that this company supports your rights. And even when I was dumped by other companies, this company wrote me a personal letter and said, we're going to stick with you. We support your viewers. We support America. And also, we support the damn best boxers in America that bring the sort of hold in the support that you desire in places that very few will go. But they will go. Undertak will go where many, many won't. Go to getundertak.com. That's GETUNDERTAC.com. That's getundertak.com. GETUNDERTAC.com right now. Save 20% off your first order with the offer code OFFENSIVE20. That's OFFENSIVE20. That's OFFENSIVE20. So on top of being a superior product for 30% less, you can save an additional 20%. Satisfaction guaranteed or your money back. That's getundertak.com. Getundertak.com. Offer code OFFENSIVE20. So speaking of feeling secure, like you said, we are in the situation, Zuby, where it is fact from fiction has become nearly impossible to derive in so many situations where it's like the difference between the not the bee and the Babylon bee satire is confusing, and to the point to where a fact check and a fact check that needs to be fact checked is indiscernible. And like, and I don't know about you, but even for someone, you're a highly intellectual person, you're well educated, you're well respected, and even you watch that video and you're like, what the hell?
Yeah. It's really weird. And you know, something that is important to say, especially for being here in the US and a lot of American listeners, is that I often hear people say that the world has gone mad, and it's not the world, it's the West. Especially the Anglosphere, right? It's the West. It's UK, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, the USA, and some Western European countries that have gone off the rails over the past 10 years on so many various issues. It's not the entire world. You can go to parts of Asia, the Middle East, South America, Africa, and stuff is normal. A man is still a man. A woman is still a woman. You know, you can distinguish reality from satire. And there's something really weird that's been going on. I want to say, especially in the past 7 to 8 years, it's really just accelerated. And sometimes I don't know if we give stuff like this too much attention, and people like this then create these TikToks and these crazy tweets and all this stuff to get attention because it works and people react and respond to it. But I think it's important for people to recognize this is not necessarily a global phenomenon. This is something that's peculiar to our countries and to our societies.
Right. But you know, and it is interesting though, if we can go to, if we can put video two on B-roll for a second here, Savannah, just in the middle, like we've gotten to the point with this, like this interdimensional goblin person. That's what Savannah calls it. It makes absolutely no sense, but it also comes to the point too, to where you realize this is not just infecting a strange person who doesn't work, but we've seen this movement to even where, like when I grew up, when I was in school, teachers were, it was considered like a classier profession, meaning it wasn't even just business casual per se. People dressed very nicely, even in a public school. But I've seen this sort of degradation, this level of standards lower, to where people wonder why they're unhappy. People wonder why they have no purpose in life. And I think part of that's because they don't hold themselves to any standards. They don't believe there's a necessity for a health standard, for a psychological standard, shoot, even a spiritual standard. Like I'll admit that there are weeks where I'm like, oh crap, like I'm pretty far from God. I haven't been reading my Bible. I've not been praying. I got to go back. I got to like fast. I got to pray. I got to snap back into this. There's a standard. And I started noticing this, that even from a young age, there's nobody to look up to in our society anymore to know what a standard of professionalism is. If we can play video number four, Savannah, I want to show you, I'm really shocked at what public schools are now allowing for the dress code for teachers of our impressionable students. Let's watch that. So this says, would you do a video of the outfits that you wear while you were teaching? She's wearing a Black Lives Matter shirt. What does that say?
Protect trans kids.
Protect trans kids. Like, first of all, Zuby, I don't know about you, but these look like, I'm not bagging on the fits. Cool. Like, wear whatever the hell you want. I do not care. I know, but like, besides maybe that looks professional. Do you remember teachers being allowed to show like arm and leg tattoos growing up? Because that's new to me.
No, I don't. Was not a thing. It definitely wouldn't have been permitted where I grew up. You wouldn't even have been hired. I grew up in Saudi Arabia, no. FYI. But I went to
she wouldn't have been hired from the beginning.
I went to an international school, though. But even in an international, more liberal school, this would not have flown. And it's so interesting what you say about standards, because that's totally correct. We've had people trying to obliterate standards for the past couple decades. And I can understand where it stems from, because in anything, there are always two ways you can look at something, right? You can look at it internally, or you can look at it externally. You can try to change yourself, or you can try to change the world and everybody around you. And despite it being much easier to change and control yourself and your actions and your behavior, a lot of people, especially those who have this more victimhood type mentality, they're always trying to shift the entire world. They want to blow up the standards, change the entire system, control everybody around them, rather than just taking that personal responsibility and ownership and controlling their own behavior. And it leads to a lot of misery, leads to a lot of lack of success, leads to a lot of frustration and anger even projected onto other people. And that seems to be what's going on. Instead of people saying, hey, that's the standard, let me at least strive towards it. Like, we all fall short on various things. Doesn't matter, physical, spiritual, mental, education. We fall short on things, right? None of us are perfect.
We're not condemning anyone.
No, but we recognize there is a standard. There is something good that we should strive for in all these different avenues. But there are people out there who want to just obliterate the standards. So instead of themselves raising up, they just say, no, that standard is incorrect. The problem is with you. The problem is with society. If you don't accept me, you know, someone could be 300 pounds, morbidly obese, and rather than them saying, you know what, I should lose weight. I should control what I'm eating. I should do some exercise, and then I can become healthier, objectively healthier, more attractive, better looking, have more energy, all of that. They say, no, the problem was with society. They're fat shaming. They have false beauty standards. That you want to change the whole beauty standards of society and change what men and women are attracted to and change what is considered healthy and try to delude everyone, rather than you just taking that ownership. And I think maybe we need to be a little bit more firm with, we need to be a little bit more firm with people who are promoting this stuff, because it's important to listen to all kinds of different ideas. And of course, everyone has freedom of speech and all that. But I think in the West, people have just become so soft on everything, where it's like, it's considered more wrong to rebuke that kind of idea and being judgmental. That's worse than the thing that you're judging, right? At no cost are we supposed to judge anything. We're not supposed to condemn anything. We're not supposed to say anything is better than anything. You're supposed to wholeheartedly accept, embrace, and promote everything. And I don't disagree with that. You can listen to all different opinions, but then you can say, no, okay, this is wrong because of this, or that is better than that objectively because of X, Y, Z. But people take issue with that. They'll say you're being judgmental.
Well, yeah. And that's what you said with this changing of standards. I find it to be, I would feel quite disrespected, because I know, because you're not even American, but you know that Americans have the most interesting and strange relation with race. It is so bizarre. I feel like there's no other country that has a stranger relation, because even this new BLM movement that kind of spread a little bit to the UK, a little bit to Australia and Canada, still originated here. Pretty much anything super epic and anything super bullshit probably came from this country at this point. It's like we produce the best music and the worst music, right? It's like this sweet paradoxical balance. But it's like nothing is more, I guess, exemplary of what we're talking about than this class from Frank Linst Yoga, which was offering pricing for a class. Is Franklin Street Yoga pricing, which is $18, with the assumption, right? I love how this is what's funny, is that it's the assumption that white people are doing yoga because the price is $18. Mm-hmm. So they're already assuming, like, the natural mating call of a new age white woman. They've got to get the Lululemons, right? That promote LGBT rights, but probably use some sort of like indentured slave labor in another country to some extent. And then they pay $18, and maybe a guy pays $18 just to watch them bend and do what they want to do. They feel like they're better than you. They're sweating. And then it says $11 for the BIPOCs, the BIPOC, the isn't that Black Indigenous People of Color, is what that stands for. And so instead of like, you know, believing that somebody who's Black or Indigenous, which I reject the Indigenous phrase already, because there's no such thing as an Indigenous person to really any land, technically, whoever's conquered it at the time or whoever runs and rules it technically owns it and runs it. That's just been a fall of history. However, the Black Indigenous People of Color thing is like they're $11, basically saying, which is about like a third cheaper, is that we don't believe y'all can pay the same price, mm-hmm. that you guys cannot work the same, you cannot earn the same, you cannot have the same net worth or value. And so instead of encouraging you to rise up, we're going to set the standard lower for you, which I have found to be the most disrespectful thing personally, mm-hmm. as a BIPOC myself, and we have one over there too. So Savannah.
Oh, yeah, I always forget that I'm brown. Thank you for reminding me.
Yeah, brown and black. It's the BBI. Mm-hmm. No, but I just meant like, I just think, you know, it's somewhat interesting that that's what we've come to in terms of how do you solve, which I also mm-hmm. think is a largely fabricated, these racial disparities, kind of like the gender disparities. You can usually explain why. Yeah. We're going to then just charge people less, which is unfair to both groups. And it's like, how could you function in a society where depending on who lives there, the standards are different, yet you say we're all the same.
Yeah. It's really frustrating, man. You know, I rarely use this phrase, but as a black man, stuff like this is the real systemic racism. This is, you want to talk racism, charging people different ticket prices based on their skin color, period. This is what it is. This is what it is. This is the most widespread, accepted and tolerated and promoted form of racism. You see this across all things, this bigotry of low expectations. This is offensive to white people. It's offensive to non-white people. It's offensive to everyone. This term BIPOC, that term is offensive. BIPOC, people of color, POC. I hate these terms. Don't call me a BIPOC. If someone calls me a BIPOC, I will correct them. Don't call me that. Don't call me a BIPOC. Don't call me a person of color. You can call me black. You can call me Zuby. You can call me African. Don't call me a POC or a BIPOC or whatever your freaking stupid acronyms are. No.
Yeah. And I know that we can sometimes laugh at this stuff, but like ultimately, because I love casual racist humor, and I think I genuinely do, only because I think almost like when you can't do something, yep. it pushes you more and more to want to talk about it. Yep. It's the same reason why where they like try to solve anti-Semitism or like solve, you know, some sort of criticism of the Jewish people. And then they force all these people who are critical of Jews into like these corners of the web to where they end up in these echo chambers and they end up feeding each other. And they actually end up exasperating the problem. Then they make alt troll accounts and then they go on to every sort of, you know, internet site, and then they just keep spamming this stuff, and then they get deleted, and they essentially make a problem out of something that didn't need to be, because you start telling a bunch of young kids, yep. here's something you can't do or you can't talk about. It actually backfires, yeah. right? It's a little bit like the war on drugs. It's like it's the understanding, I get where you're going, but the execution ends up creating a different yeah. kind of or a bigger problem. And that's what I see with this stuff too, is like you actually are creating more problems than you're helping.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this is the kind of stuff I find, like what that ticket pricing thing, right? That despair. That's the kind of thing that I find actually offensive. Like I'm quite hard to offend, and I'm not offended by like little jokes or whatever people try, but stuff like this, because this sends a really deep message. Like this is actually quite a deep thing. It might look kind of silly, but if you really think about the thinking behind this, this is actual. I've often said that the woke stuff is left-wing white supremacy. Because it is. If you see the way they treat race, the way they talk about people of color, BIPOC, POC, and the way they talk about white, it's all under this assumption that white people are superior. All the thing, even the term POC, it just means non-white. BIPOC, it means non-white. The only groups who, it's literally KKK language, right? Why do you need to separate all of humanity into white and not white?
It's a dichotomy that we don't need.
That's white supremacist right. dichotomy. Well, that's literally how white supremacists think. We have the white people and then everybody else. Asian, Arab, Black, Latino, mixed. All of you are one group. And then there's just white people, right? And who is it that's always talking about white supremacy? It's these lefties now, right? There's no one on the right to white supremacy. Like, what are you even talking about? Like, I don't think white people are superior. I don't think anybody's superior. Right? That's ridiculous, but they do. That's why they're charging different ticket prices. That's why they're lowering standards for non-white children to go to school or to university. They're doing all of this weird stuff under this guise of we are addressing the issue. And it's like you are perpetuating institutional and systemic racism by proper definition. You are enforcing racist policies. If I'm running an event and I have the Gentile ticket price and I have the Jewish ticket price, regardless of which one is higher or lower, like WTF, that's insane. This is the ticket price for black people. This is the ticket price for non-black people. Like that's so obviously racist. Like, obviously. So it blows my mind that people even can do this sort of thing. And not everybody immediately sees that as like, yo, what the heck? Like, what on earth are you guys doing here?
Well, it's a distraction too from the class issue because, you know, the assumption that all black people are just poor is
another racist assumption.
Yeah, so it is interesting though. And that's why I find that most of these discussions on race are to get us off the class issue because it's not like, oh, we have fixated pricing here, which by the way, before people that disagree with fixed pricing based off of income, you actually probably do agree with it to some extent, meaning people always do this for for active duty military, the assumption that they're not making as much money, but they're giving a sacrifice for the country. So we'll respect them, give them a discount for their sacrifice. Number two, people have student pricing, right? Or like even like young adult pricing at gyms. They'll have like under 21, 18 to 21 is like $50 off a month or whatever. Meaning we do understand there are brackets. There are especially, you know, you're 18 to 21. How much money on average would you have unless your parents, you know, you had daddy's money? So, I mean, there is that understanding that, and there's also like, you know, even grants or things where like, you know, a company like YMCA will take donations to be able to help people who make low income to be able to subsidize. There's nothing wrong with that stuff. It's private people working on that. But the assumption that you should be treated differently, this comes down to the fact too that when you go, it doesn't stop at skin color. It's not just arbitrary. It goes on to like this idea of us and the other and creating these two groups has been taken to the point of such absurdity that it's even gone into eating meat. And this status, Savannah, did you put this in here with eating meat is racist and misogynist?
I did. I saw it this morning and I was like, Zuby of all people needs to listen to and react to
this. I haven't seen this.
It's amazing. But I'm
believing this is parody. Let's start doing this. Parody or fact or fiction.
Okay.
Because some of these, I think once I watch them, I realize they are fiction. And some I realize are fact. And I also get it wrong probably 90% of the time. Like, I'm like, oh, that's real. And then it's not.
Okay.
So I'm going fiction because that doesn't sound like someone would make that argument to me. Zuby?
I've actually heard the argument before, so I think it's definitely real.
Okay. Savannah?
Real.
Okay. Yeah. I haven't seen it. Did you see it? This is one of Savannah's videos.
I haven't seen it.
All right. I haven't seen it either. Let's watch it. You guys decide right now if you're watching in the chat. As you figure it out and you decide what you're wanting to know, if you think it's fact or fiction, put fact or fiction in the chat if you think you know. And we'll see who's right at the end. Let's watch this.
The assumption that the best protein comes from corpses is a racist belief. How do you know the animal would have picked you to feed off their corpse? 21st century animal eating requires our complicity in a new colonialism. These events especially affect girls and young women. Your hamburger comes with a dose of misogyny. Popular culture is flooded with references to sexy cows, sexy pigs, sexy chickens, sexy fishes, who all just want to have fun. Meat eating is also one of the ways gender-based structures of oppression are perpetuated. Masculinity, a construct of the gender binary facing constant destabilization, feels always under threat. And eating animals is its protection racket. White supremacists weaponized it, eating meat, eggs, and dairy. And the baiting of liberal men as so-called soy boys are all part of the neo-Nazi messaging. To say you care about animals is considered a sign of weakness in a world still committed to the gender binary. Meat eaters like anti-abortionists have forgotten that one quality of non-existence is not having awareness about existence. When all else fails, meat eaters assert that animals are not our equals. I heard all your laughter. I know some of these must be new ideas or you think they're fringe or whatever. Our whiteness is part of the problem of meat eating.
Okay, just shut her off. And before we talk about this, obviously, I need to protect my ears, but more importantly, you need to protect your information online, which is why I got to talk to you about StartMail. So obviously, no matter what you're using for your internet security services, you might not have thought about your email specifically, being that big tech companies actually take your information, people like that end up buying it, and then they use it to create these nonprofits or corporate groups that end up using your information against you to cause problems in your own personal life, which is why you've got to make sure that you have encryption back-to-back that keeps your emails not only safe and secure, but when you delete your email, they are firmly deleted and genuinely deleted, and they go away completely, unlike the ones that the government can always end up bringing up. And someone like me actually knows the importance of this, but guys, even if you're just talking about the Constitution, your basic rights, how to move around the world or whatnot, people are spying on you, and you need to start securing your email privacy with StartMail. If you sign up today, you'll get 50% off your first year. Go to startmail.com/offensive. That's STARTMAIL. That's StartMail with a T, StartMail.com/offensive for 50% off your first year. StartMail.com/offensive for 50% off your first year. Check it out today. Start securing your internet identity online, especially with emails and sensitive information. We hope that you check it out. That's StartMail.com/offensive. Check it out today. So that really was Oxford then.
That was Oxford University. That's the Oxford Union.
And she's not trolling. This is one of those debate stages.
No, this is real. I saw that Michaela Peterson sitting there, so I think she was on the opposite side.
Oh, so this is probably the debate between her and Michaela.
They were debating meat eating, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to break down here, Zudi. There's a lot to talk about. And that's the absurdity of what we've gotten into is like, okay, let's start from the beginning of that, you know, this idea that the corpse might not have chosen you. There's like this misogyny that I maybe I'm getting this wrong, but like men eat more meat than women or something. And it's like a misogynist thing. And somehow like, cause if you don't eat meat, then you're a soy boy, which is the construct of like eating meat is overtly masculine, which is actually a true, very objectively true statement. Preparing meat can also be masculine as well. Like in certain ways, like in my house, my wife never cooks the red meat. I always cook the red meat and she cooks the non-red meat. That's just an agreement we make.
Interesting.
And so it's like, it's an understanding. I mean, some women do cook good steaks, but I still think men can always cook better than women in the end, especially with grilling. Long story short, I also think we enjoy it. I don't think women enjoy the grilling, the simple nature. Simple
I think around the world, more women cook meat than men do.
Correct. But the red meat, I'm talking about on the grill, like when we're just hanging out, they cook out of necessity, but in the Western countries, we love just grilling. I'm talking about grilling. And they
But this is a Western bias here, and I'm sure she'd have an issue with that.
But she's a Westerner.
I know.
This is the United Kingdom.
I know. She's American, right?
She sounds very American.
Yeah. White liberal American women are weird, man.
I know.
Like that combination.
Michaela's Canadian, I think, right?
Yeah, that 4-point combination, I've noticed some trends there. And I don't want to stereotype.
Why are they weird? Tell me.
I don't know why. I'm just saying they are. That combination produces some very bizarre people.
And you know, no, you're completely
it's true.
Right. It's just like, it's so strange though to me too. Like, that's why I mean, like how it's racism. Like, and you're right. And that's what I said. Women do prepare meat very well. And sometimes they handle meat very well, both with their hands and on the grill. And that's very good. But I will say on top of that is that like this idea though, of them saying that meat is racist, part of the attack on this is that men, it's a great holistic protein source in order to get strong. Someone's getting swollen here and jacksonated. And then there's the newest member of the jacksonated community, Savannah Hernandez.
Oh yeah.
Getting so swole. She's getting so slow.
Straight up drinking raw eggs, steaks every day. Love
you should you should cook the eggs because you absorb the protein better from eggs than raw. Yeah.
I've heard that, but everyone's really into drinking raw eggs. I wanted to try it just to like you
Rocky
know.
Has a lot to answer for.
Oh my goodness.
That's where that started.
It's like the raw meat. It's like I understand like not like overcooking your vegetables to break down the vitamins and the minerals and stuff like that. I understand like there's an idea of not overcooking food so that you actually destroy like structure. But
yeah, don't do raw eggs, guys.
The raw thing and raw meat is a very much a grift thing, I think.
Can I build on to Zuby's point, though, about like why white women are weird?
Nope.
Can I build on to
Nope, moving on. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
So what I think it is with women specifically is that we're very emotional creatures and our entire society has weaponized racism very well against white women. So they feel very bad about their skin tone, about eating meat, about all of these fake constructs that society pushes in on them, which is why they're the ones who are the biggest apologists for this. That's why they're the ones that are like, we're going to give you yoga classes at a discount because you're brown and we feel bad because we've, gotten to profit off of our white privilege. So, just to build on your point there, I think that the reason why they're like that is because women have the propaganda has been weaponized so brilliantly against them.
Especially in the USA, though. Mm-hmm. Especially in the USA. And it only affects the liberal side, not the white American conservative women are awesome.
Right. Well, that's true. We love our white women, don't we? We love them. We do love them.
Yeah, I can't talk too much on that.
No one loves white women more than Zuby.
It's okay, Zuby. That's how I am with white men. So.
It's true.
What can we say?
There's a truth to it all. And in saying that, though, like I want to say this, like with the insanity and what's going on, this idea of putting everyone to class, right? Meat eaters can't just enjoy meat. Yeah. They're misogynistic. They're racist. It's always got to be this system of breaking people apart into an in-group and an out-group. Mm-hmm. And the weird thing is, though, is that like life didn't always used to be like this. In fact, there was a time when the binary of gender, I even hate using these words, you know, when the 4 years ago on this, when the show started, those were words we were introducing to people. And Savannah, I would even say as early as 2019, some of this stuff like neurogenders and demi-queers and things were things we were introducing to our audience, and they were like shocked this was real. And now these have become literally a part of the academia, like a part of the institutionalized part of our countries. And I don't know if that shocked you how quickly we've deteriorated down into this.
The thing is, they've always been there. But do you know my take on this? We need to just laugh at people like this,
right? Oh, I've been laughing.
I think a big problem in the West is that there's this idea that every individual and every idea needs to be treated with the same degree of seriousness, and everything needs to be like really thought through. And like some stuff is just dumb. It's stupid. Like all this claptrap she just said, stupid. Laugh at it, mock it. Like even getting into some deep intellectual debate and trying to unpack her ideas, like, no, you just said a whole bunch of tripe. You just said a bunch of nonsense.
The crowd did laugh.
I know they laughed. They should, because it's ridiculous. The notion that a man can just, you know, throw on a dress and become a woman is laughable. Right? The fact that we're even entertaining this idea so much. Go around Africa and promote some of these ideas. Go around to anyone, villagers, people in the city, what that would be like, go away. Like, what's wrong with you? Like, you're an idiot. Like, they won't even entertain the idea because it's so absurd. I'd love her to take that idea and go around to the Middle East and Africa and parts of South America and promote that. Like, here, people will listen and, you know, they'll still clap and they'll be like, some interesting idea. I'm like, no, that was just a bunch of claptrap. That was a bunch of nonsense. There was nothing there that is worth delving deep into or that is really useful or whatever. And she should have the right to speak and to explain all of her nonsense. But we also, I think by treating it seriously, we're giving some of these ideas too much credibility. You know, this is how we've ended up in this madness, especially with some of the gender ideology stuff, where people are like, yeah, you know, like literally 10 years ago, sex and gender meant the same thing and nobody debated it. Synonyms, sex, gender, cool, same thing, right? Sex can have some more meanings, because it can also refer to intercourse, etc. But now people are like, okay, maybe yeah, sex and gender are different things. So once somebody accepts that, then that's how the ideology can take root. If you accept that sex and gender are totally different, separate concepts, like you're on your road to indoctrination now. Because now, once you accept that parsing out, then someone can say, oh, okay, well, now a man is different, and that man is now separate from male. Female is separate from woman. And this is the trick they do, right? So they say, oh no, you're referring to female. You're talking about sex. I'm talking about a woman. That's a different concept. That's a social construct. And then they can do like their language manipulation and their magic to get people to believe whatever the heck they want. And suddenly you've got men, inverted commas, menstruating and getting pregnant and being able to compete in female sports because it's women's sports. And once you accept some of the premises, then they've got you.
Well, and it's true. And like, and then they bring this stuff up. Savannah, if you go to my screen here, NPR, which is partially government funded, almost fully, this is similar to our BBC. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah.
But, you know, they put out really, really good journalisming, I'm really proud to say. You know, I actually kind of got my career started on NPR, actually. So thank you. Shout out to NPR LA for talking to me about when I got put into a corner as the only straight white male at my work, and everyone had to explain how I was the oppressor and they were the oppressed. This is many years ago before this was really well known, and I went public with it. To all you racist Islamic supremacists and female supremacists, fuck you. Also, thanks for getting me out of teaching. That would have been a doozy. NPR says some white people may choose the yellow butt plug because it feels neutral, but some academics argue out that the superior butt plug, no, I'm just kidding, no, the white butt plug, that's what they're trying to say, right? So this is again where they're going, the superior thumb, okay? And I know, guys, my thumb's still jacked up, but this is what they're saying. Some say that if you opt out of the white one, it signals a lack of awareness about white privilege, akin to society associating whiteness with being raceless, meaning it's like if you don't accept that the uniqueness of being white and see the privilege that comes out of that, and that, you know, again, that you're superior, that there's something superior.
White supremacist concept.
Yeah, that you're superior. Your butt plug is the most secure and superior by choosing the yellow. Now, maybe that's because because of the Stop Asian Hate, they don't want us choosing the yellow one. I don't know. Is that might be the Chinaman. But I will just say that it's like, the yellow was literally meant for no other reason, I think, than to prevent this. Like, I don't even see why we needed the color emojis. It was like, hey, nobody's a yellow guy, okay? Nobody's a yellow guy. Yeah. So let's literally take this color that nobody is and create a generic expression with facial features and facial expressions that everybody does, like this or like this or just something. And instead, we had to turn it not only into just like, there's like a white and a black. It's like there's a black, a mixed black, a Hispanic, a mixed white Hispanic, and then a white person, and then Kangmin Lee.
I have a question, Elijah.
Yeah.
Read this again and imagine it's written by an actual white supremacist or a member of the KKK. Doesn't it work perfectly?
Yeah, so I'm going to say this. So some white people are going to choose the non-white thumb because they just want to be neutral. But some academics argue that if you opt out of your white identity and your white thumb, it signals a lack of awareness about your superiority of your white skin, akin to a society associating whiteness with being raceless, meaning you can't escape the superiority of your white skin. That's exactly literally what it says.
Yeah, like whenever I read this woke stuff, it reads the exact same as some actual white supremacist stuff from 100 years ago. It was the same thing when they had that stuff with the Smithsonian. Do you remember where they had like things like belief in the scientific method, keeping on time, personal responsibility, logic, all of these things being white, being symbols of whiteness, right? Being on basically everything that makes an individual or a society successful, all these things were attributed to whiteness. I was reading all of this. I was like, this literally could have been written by a full-blown white supremacist. Like they agree with these ideas. They agree that these things that make individuals and society successful are specific to white European people.
Right.
Right. Like, so it's impossible to determine when you get these like hyper woke race obsessed people or organizations. And I read what they're saying, or I listen to what they're saying. It is identical. It's indistinguishable from true white supremacist rhetoric. And I do not know if they're aware of that. I doubt it because they lack awareness, but that's the thing I find most mind blowing about it all. I'm just reading it and I'm like, dude, this is a huge regressive step backwards.
Yeah, you know, and I was going to say this, though, like I was saying that we can see people can change because I want to watch two videos. Joe Biden actually, you know, recently had switched his stance on gay marriage. And I want to remind you of this. Let's go and let's watch this with Joe Biden just a few years ago was saying about this gender stuff before we've completely switched to all this insanity and the racism. Things used to be a little bit normal in this country in some ways. Let's go ahead and let's watch this.
I can't believe the American people can't see through this. We already have a law, the Defense of Marriage Act, where we've all voted, not where I voted and others said, look, marriage is between a man and a woman, and states must respect that. Nobody's violated that law. There's been no challenge to that law. Why do we need a constitutional amendment? Marriage is between a man and a woman. What's the game going on here?
Do you support gay marriage?
No. Barack Obama nor I support redefining from a civil side what constitutes marriage.
Yeah. I feel like, man, it's amazing to believe that that's the same human being who's currently in the White House.
It doesn't even come across. There's no similarity. In fact, Joe Biden used to be very much more aligned with my political views than he is. Like people always say, like, you're extreme. It's like, actually, in some ways, when I look at Democrats back in the 90s, I'm like, in early 2000s, I'm like, and I don't say this shamefully, like maybe I would have been a Democrat. Like, I don't know. Yeah. I just, because there was a little bit of a difference in the parties.
Oh, totally.
And you look at this and you go, man, they were against gay marriage. They were, I mean, I don't believe in all the social programs they believed in, so I probably wouldn't have been technically. But theoretically, he's like, yeah, they care about the family. Remember, all the big corporations were on board with this too.
Yeah.
And America never voted on gay marriage. We never wanted it. In fact, and people can get mad about that. And, you know, I personally don't take issue with someone being gay. In terms of a civil situation, morally, I think it's wrong. But also on top of that, I understand we live in a free country where people can choose to do what's morally right or wrong. And we have some of those expressions. But it's like when you come out today and say, like, yeah, I don't think man, two men should be married. I don't believe in gay marriage. You're like, dude, are you insane? You're like, dude, the president believed that 10 years ago.
It's wild. The speed at which things change. I think people often forget that, how quickly things can change. I mean, I very, very clearly remember the 2008 election when Obama got elected. And it's so interesting to even watch some of his speeches and stuff from back then, because he sounds like a modern day Republican, whether he's talking about that aforementioned issue, or he's talking about immigration and border policy, or he's talking about certain things to do with family. He just sounds like a Republican. And it's amazing that in under 15 years, there has been such a strong shift. Now, regardless of someone's individual position on something like gay marriage, you know, that's a whole other conversation. But what is undeniable is just the speed at which something can change in society and go from fringe to mainstream. Not just that, but for the former mainstream to become unthinkable or unsayable is pretty bonkers. And I guess depending on the issue and someone's feeling on the issue, they may think that's good or bad, or, you know, case by case basis. You know, it's good that people are no longer advocating slavery. I see people are going back to new forms of segregation. Right. But it's interesting. It's interesting. And it also shows the way that language changes. Because again, regardless of someone's position on, say, this particular issue, the word marriage was redefined. It was redefined intentionally to go from, you know, the definition of marriage historically all throughout most human history was between a man and a woman. And so the definition was changed and expanded in order for this political agenda to go through. Now, someone may think that that's fair and that's a good thing. I'm not here to judge on either side of it, but that's what happens.
I think it led to a snowball effect.
You know, everyone's entitled to their opinion, and we should be allowed to have different opinions. But we see this all the time now. It's the changing of language. And when language is being changed, there's always an agenda behind it. If a word used to mean something and then 2 years later, oh, that word literally means something different now. You see the way that people are trying to redefine the word racism, redefine the word vaccine has been redefined. The word anti-vaxxer has been redefined. These are taking place literally over the past couple of years. And there's an agenda behind it, right? An anti-vaxxer, by dictionary definition, used to mean someone who is against all vaccination, period. Now, have you seen how they've redefined it?
Yeah.
Yeah, now it includes people mandates. Who are against mandates. So now the majority of people in the world, I believe, are now anti-vaxxers by the dictionary definition. Even if you've taken every vaccine under the sun and you're very pro-vaccine, whatever, if you don't think other people should be forced to take it, you don't think it should be mandatory, by dictionary definition, you're now an anti-vaxxer. And that's very Orwellian. Very disturbing. And maybe the most disturbing part of it is that people don't realize when it's happening, because most people are not following these things as closely as we are.
Right. And we don't have to stay stuck. By the way, we'll be back with Zuby in a moment. You can follow him, Zuby, pretty much anywhere, Zuby. And you can also find his new album wherever you can stream music. I'm pretty sure, right? You can find the new rap album we were listening to in the car. It's banging. They should check it out. You guys should stream it, purchase it.
Word of Zuby.
Word of Zuby is what it's called. And before we come back to that, guys, we're going to talk to someone named Philip Tanzer, who was a gay porn star. And he turned to Christ and has sort of changed his entire life around. He's now in a straight relationship and is here to talk to us about, you know, that struggle with what sort of made him become gay, how he lived as a gay porn star, what the lifestyle was like. It's not graphic. It's fine for anyone probably 13 and older. I usually say the show's good for 13 and older. And sort of like what that's like, you know, finding out that he can live a straight lifestyle, he can honor God, and then the struggle that he has with same-sex attraction and how do you live with that as an individual. It's a great story, and since this is the day of celebrating people from around the world, he's also in the United Kingdom, so we had to film it at a previous time. But anyway, we want to welcome to Slightly Offensive Philip Tanzer, previous gay porn star turned Christian in a straight relationship. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here. Thank you for having me. Oh, The confetti of color.
I'm sure this is not the first time you've had COC in your face, which we won't get too much into. I guess it's spelled a little different. You're not clearly not ashamed of your life story or anything. You're not embarrassed. You're here. You're here to talk about it. So let's just jump right into your life. Obviously, being a former gay porn star before the porn, there's some insinuation that you identified as being gay. Can you talk to me a little bit about your life story when you realized or thought that you were gay and, you know, coming out about that and when you sort of embraced that identity?
Okay. I would say that I always felt same-sex attracted, and I would think that it has to do with, let's say, not childhood trauma, but a lack of strong father figures in my childhood. My father lived in the was with me when I grew up, but he wasn't the father that I needed in some ways. I think I could have done with a more masculine, stronger father figure, more involved in many ways. When I was a teenager, I identified as asexual with a tendency towards men. So the whole non-binary or like weird categories things, I already did that 25 years ago. But when I identified it as asexual with a tendency towards men, society, not the LGBT community, but wider German society, pushed me towards saying, oh, so you're gay and you have to be proud of being gay. And after a while, I just gave up and I started identifying as gay. I had sex with men. It didn't feel right, but it felt, let's say, hot. But up until the, let's say, when I was 27, I barely had any sex. And then I started doing porn pretty much from doing no sex to doing porn.
Okay, so then let's break this down. So obviously, you know, there are those elements we've talked about on the show where I think it's quite complex of why people have same-sex attraction. I think besides it being, people say it's unnatural. I would say almost opposite, as in like it's natural, meaning it's natural to the nature of a sinful human being, of somebody who would have something, some error or something that is wrong with them. And when I say it's natural, I don't mean that it's good. I don't mean that just because, you know, a lion mauling us and ripping our limbs off in the middle of a Sahara, or not Sahara, but in the middle of a savanna, might be a natural occurrence that's not good and it wants to be avoided. So there is a difference in that. And so you said there was a bit of this confusion and you felt like you had society sort of pushing you to identify as being gay. What did that look like? What do you mean by society was sort of influencing your sexuality?
Well, people wanted to put a label on me. And already 27 years ago, around that time in Germany, there was a huge push towards gay pride. And people just automatically assumed that the reason why I wouldn't call myself gay was because I didn't feel comfortable, which wasn't the case. I just felt that I needed time and I wanted to understand where this same-sex attraction came from. And if it was the right path for me or not. And society, sorry, that was my dog.
Oh, I have a dog. My dog society, does the same thing.
Sorry about that. And overall, there is this strong push, and I think it's getting younger and younger for people to identifying as something. And nowadays it's identifying as trans, identifying as non-straight, because it gives you brownie points. And I find that incredibly dangerous. Let children and young people be just people and let them experiencing themselves with guidance. I still have a same-sex attraction and I don't try to get rid of that. But I expanded my view, so to speak, and I realized that I could have wonderful, intimate relations with women, and I'm currently in a happy relationship, and we want to start a family.
So let's talk about how you got there. So you said this is something that happened. You at one point embraced the identity. You weren't having a lot of sex. Tell me about how you got in to porn from being someone who wasn't having sex to doing this as a career, and what sort of life was like both emotionally, spiritually, and professionally working in the gay porn industry.
like I would say pretty much everybody or almost everybody, I did it because I needed money. And I know that a couple of days ago you had a female ex-porn actress who now does OnlyFans, and I disagreed with a lot of her views. I think that it's usually not a real choice. You feel like you have to do it. There are very few exceptions. And I decided to do porn. This is going to sound weird, but I actually wanted to bring something positive into the porn industry as well. Because when I saw porn, it was always completely heartless and there was no connection. And I thought maybe I could bring something positive into the business, which is almost impossible because it's such a huge business and they want to make money, obviously. And cuddly, lovey sex doesn't really sell that well. Now, being in the porn industry, and I'm sorry that I have to say that, but it was actually a positive experience, at least behind the scenes. I was working in San Francisco and all the people that I was working with were great people that really cared about me. And there was a strong emphasis on keeping me safe in many ways. But at the same time, a lot of porn actors, they are drug addicts or become drug addicts. Almost all of them take steroids. And on top of the porn industry, which is already harmful, I think the even more harmful bit is that a lot of them go into escort services. Having sex with customers. And I think that's even more harmful than the porn industry.
Why do you say that?
Because in the porn industry, the sex that you have is very cold. It's in some ways, obviously, you know, MTV Jackass. And to me, it feels often like Jackass. You just do something weird and funny with your body. And it's easy to step out of that because there is the light crew and the person who gives you something to drink. And then they say stop. And then they say start again. And you know why you're there. You're there to create a product. I'm not trying to defend it at all, but when you work as an escort, and I thought I had to do that for a couple of days, and then I immediately stopped because it burned my soul immediately. You are being treated like a piece of meat, and you feed people's needs that are already in a pretty dark place sometimes, and they take you into a dark place with them.
Wow. And so, you know, you're in the middle of all this. I appreciate the honesty, though, too, because I really hate when people just try to talk about, oh, yeah, this was so bad and I left, as if God can't also rescue you out of things that appear good or positive, meaning not everything that is wrong in the world, not everything that God expresses is wrong, feels necessarily wrong or the experience is somehow depressing. But in the end, I think the reason why a lot of people are on anti-anxiety, a lot of antidepressants, is because when we're not living in the design that God designed for us, we're not living the way we should, we feel a sense of discomfort, a sense of displacement. And I think that's what we're seeing in mass in society. So you went through this, you said about 27 to 32. Talk to me about how you went about getting out of the porn or retiring from the gay porn industry and then ended up somehow, from what I read, renouncing your homosexuality identity as being gay. And then you ended up in a straight relationship. I mean, the world would say this doesn't happen. This is crazy. How could this happen? So I'm curious. I'd love to know what was that adventure and that timeline?
I can obviously only talk about my own experience, and I think I was always protected. So even though I lived a sinful life, I was always very close to God, or God was always very close to me. So I always was protected. I never took drugs. I always did protected sex, used condoms. So, and I would say in many ways, my heart and my soul were protected as well due to my faith. At one point, I could see, well, first of all, porn was not a long-term solution for me. And I spent very little time in porn, even when I was a very famous porn star. I lived in Germany in a small garden house with my dog next to the forest. That was my life. And then I would fly over to America for a couple of weeks each year, produce some of these scenes, make money, and then I would go back to a very, very normal and quiet life. And that really protected me. The porn industry when I entered, it was okay. There were positive aspects, as in people still cared about each other. But the pressure to free online porn became so great on the porn industry that they couldn't care as much about their models anymore. They had to start doing bareback, so unprotected sex, which was for me never an option. And for me, it was also the time just to leave and move on and do other things. It didn't feel right for me. And I felt like this is the right time to protect myself and to leave. At the same time, or before I left, I realized, well, I could never see myself in a relationship with a man. I tried it, but I was like, I'm a man myself. Having in a relationship with a man is just the same of me. And I was looking for something that could actually complement my soul. And so at the age of 32, I thought, I think I should try to open myself again for women, which was really difficult because do you just go into a bar and say, hey, I'm gay, but I want to have sex with a woman again? That feels awful. And just diving into a relationship with a woman, if you don't even know if you can enjoy heterosexual relationships, is also not the right way. And in the end, I ended up actually going to a prostitute. I can't say that I'm proud of it, but at the same time, it's very hard. It's very hard if you haven't had experiences with women for such a long time to see if you could actually be happy with a woman. And I realized I could. And very shortly after that, I met a wonderful woman who I had a great relationship with, and she helped me going on this journey.
And so the journey, though, it's kind of touching briefly. Where do you say you've come from there, from someone from a prostitute to getting a relationship? Where's your mindset now about the process? Which I think the church is very dishonest with people about healing sexually or about finding your identity in Christ. I think they really kind of make it this like product. Like it's just like one day you're baptized and then you're healed and then you're gone. But you said even today you still have the same sex attraction. You still have that part of you. So where are you at right now? Because I believe life is an ongoing development. Like who is Philip Tanzer now and where is your heart and your mind on the issue? And where do you want to see yourself in 10 years?
I think that any kind of attraction or addiction is a little bit like alcoholism. You will never be completely freed of it. The demon will always be there. And to be honest, what I don't like about the church is that they make such a huge differentiation between a homosexual promiscuous lifestyle and straight promiscuous lifestyle. And I think a little less of the demonizing homosexuality and a little bit more of the demonizing all sin would be positive for the church, and overall the church should be stricter again anyways. Where I am right now, I have a wonderful girlfriend, and we are trying to start a family. There is a reason why we are not married yet. That is too long, and not too personal, but too long to get into. But we want to start a family and get married. And in a couple of years, I hope I see myself with three or four or five wonderful kids that I can raise with my wife. And I'm the same-sex attraction, to be honest, is no problem for me at all. It's the same as with straight people. You're straight, you're married. That doesn't mean you don't find women attractive anymore, but you made a conscious decision to just focus on this one woman that you love, and I do the same thing. And to be honest, I haven't had like intimacy with men for I think something like 2 years, and I don't miss it at all. It's I have that attraction, but I don't want to live it.
So in closing, you know, people today honestly have a really hard time with this subject because I think there's really two sides of the argument here. There's one side that's telling you literally embrace every kink, every weirdness, every trauma, and basically like become this sort of fluid sexual person that embraces who whatever sinful desire you have, which is why, like, in the last episode we watched some things like someone went from being gay to queer to trans to not, you know, like, basically they just keep embracing whatever next wind of doctrine kind of, like, shakes and rattles their ship. But people have, you know, a lot of struggle with the same sex attraction, because on the other side, a lot of people, you know, on the very fundamentalist trad right wing religiosity can be very condemning rather than offering redemption or an understanding. So for anybody watching this show that, you know, maybe they're struggling with same-sex attraction, maybe they're in the middle of it, they identify, totally have embraced the identity, or they have friends, family that are, you know, grappling with this, both religious and non-religious, what's your advice to those people about understanding and their approach to sexuality like that?
I think my biggest advice is love. Love yourself, not as in love your sin, but love yourself and take your time. Don't force yourself into a heterosexual relationship if you're not ready yet. Reduce your sinful behavior and move and take yourself out of the things that tempt you. I think that's a very important thing. And for those who want to help other people, and those who judge others with sinful lifestyles, use love. Yes, you have to call out the sin, and I think that's absolutely good and right, and the church actually doesn't do enough of that. But if we don't do it with love, compassion, and understanding, and real deep care for the sinner, then we will just push them deeper into their despair, which will just push them deeper into the sin. So reaching your hand out and actually helping and understanding that people need time to let go of sin. Do it the same way you would do it with an alcoholic or any other addict. It's an addiction in some ways.
Yeah, I know we could probably talk a lot more about this, but I really appreciate this. If you want to know more about Philip, if you want to follow his life, you want to understand his ideas and somebody who's going through this, or if you want to connect with him, I don't know if his DMs are open, but I'm sure there's some way to professionally contact him. If, you know, if there's ever inquiries for shows or whatever, Philip, where could people find you online? What's the best place they can access your profiles?
Well, you can find me on Twitter under PhilipTancer1. I used to have a lot of followers, but Twitter cleansed me because I supported President Trump. So that's where you can find me. And you can also Google my name on YouTube. I did interviews with Benjamin Boyce, who talked with me a lot about same-sex attraction and how I changed my lifestyle. So there's a 2-hour conversation with Benjamin Boyce.
That's so awesome. Philip Tanzer, thank you so much for taking time out of your day halfway around the world to speak to us and to connect with us. We really appreciate having you on.
Love your show. Could I have some more confetti?
Yeah, a little more confetti. Give a little more confetti. There you go. Got to celebrate 8K graphics. International. Is that our first international 8K graphics? That might be, huh? That might be, yes.
Absolutely,
Anna says it is. Anyway, Philip, thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate you. Wish you the best. And may God continue to help you on the journey of your life to continue to make peace with both your identity, who you are, where you came from, where you want to be. And we wish that you will one day have many offspring and can just continue to be a testimony, not to this once saved, always saved, I was once bad and now I'm clean, but the constant renewing of the mind that God brings us daily, weekly, monthly, and yearly as we need it consistently. We appreciate having you on.
Thank you very much. Take care.
That was a really great interview from Philip Tanzer. Obviously, we know that's a big message here, Slightly Offensive, that people can change. And obviously, the world is changing, including how you invest your money and what your portfolio is. And we've seen things go up and down in crypto. Obviously, the US dollar is pretty much at an all-time high with inflation. And it's really hard to know what to do with your hard-earned cash and how to keep the value in it. So one of the best ways in an unpredictable world is diversifying your portfolio into something like with hard and precious metals, like with gold from Birch Gold. Right now, thanks to a little known section of the IRS tax code, you can legally move your IRA or 401k into precious metals with no tax implications or penalties at all. To get started on protecting your savings by investing in gold and allowing to have your tax-sheltered account, request a free info kit from Birch Gold by texting the word OFFENSIVE, OFFENSIVE, to 989-898. This comprehensive 20-page kit reveals how gold and silver can protect your savings and how you can move your IRA or your 401k out of volatile stocks and bonds and into precious metal IRAs. There's a zero cost, zero obligation, and you can request this info for completely free. So why wait? Don't wait. Invest your money today. Text OFFENSIVE, OFFENSIVE, to the number 989-898. Again, request this free info kit on gold now by texting OFFENSIVE to 989-898. And we hope that you do. And obviously, we know that's a big mission for you, Zuby, to continue to allow people the chance of redemption and know the world can change. We are short on time. So other than your album and stuff, if people want to follow you, if they want to find you and the positivity that you bring to the world, where can they follow you on social media?
I'm on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, minds.com, everything at Zuby Music. Z-U-B-Y Music. Just search for that and you'll find me on every platform.
And then obviously, guys, if you make it this far in the podcast, you can leave a 5-star review. It's free. It doesn't cost you anything. And it helps us out a lot. And you might get it read on the show. We have 2 podcast reviews from the SOBs. Remember, the 2 ways you become an SOB is, number 1, you join the Telegram. Number 2, you join blazetv.com/slightlyoffensive Elijah now. Well, you actually can do /slightlyoffensive. It actually doesn't matter. Or Elijah for $10 off. But also, if you don't want to come into SOB and you want to get your fingers in, you want to get your toes wet or whatever, sounds kind of graphic, leave a 5-star review. We got one from how to say it. Lovulcet? I don't know. It doesn't matter.
Love Lucette.
Oh, Love Lucette. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Retarded here. Kind of sort of life-changing. This and You Are Here led me to change my life. I broke vegetarian after 12 years, over half my life, left someone, and for the next few months, I'm going to be a Disney princess, Anna from Frozen, on Disney Cruise. I hope that was the right decision. Check back in with us. Check back in with us in the next few months and let us know how it's going. But I'm glad you're making the change. Like we said, positivity. Also, we have one from Quicksilver Babe says, men being men, here for it. There's nothing more attractive than a godly man speaking nothing but truth woven in the hilarious humor. God bless. Thank you so much again for watching another episode of Slightly Offensive, the best worst show on Blaze TV. A big thank you to our guest, Zuby. Word of Zuby, right?
Word of Zuby,
the new album. It actually is a banger. We love it. We appreciate it. Don't forget to follow Savannah Hernandez on YouTube. Sav Says, also the Rapid Fire podcast. Show some support. It's more hard news. So if you wanted more news and less culture, go to Savannah and she provides that for you. My name is Elijah Schaefer, your top 17 host. Have a great rest of the week and may God bless the United States of America. I'm signing out.